Seekers, how you doing? Welcome to Thursday. Aren't you glad the Edwards trial was right? You know, that trial never should have happened. It just shouldn't. That was political punishment by a holdover from the Bush crime family. The federal attorney in North Carolina who brought those charges, what a stupid thing to have done. But that's exactly what they did to Clinton, too. So, John Edwards is responsible for his, he called them sins. I don't call them sins. I mean, he was a lying, cheating, nasty rat, you know, just a rat. How he redeems himself to his family is his business. But to bring those charges, it's like what happened to Don Siegelman, former governor of Alabama. Pay attention to this stuff, because this is the power of the state being used against a Democrat. And this is the third time a prominent Democrat has been harassed like this. Now, Republicans get harassed, too. I mean, all these cheating, lying Republicans who get caught with their drawers down around their ankles and, stand up there with their poor, tired, bedraggled-looking wives talking about, like John Ensign and these other people talking about how, oh, well, I failed my family. They come out for the public humiliation and the public forgiveness. They're all Christians, so they're home free. You know, it doesn't make any difference. And if their old ladies can't take it, well, honey, you got to get right with God. Get down on your knees. No, not for that, to pray. And you never hear of, federal charges being brought against some Republican politician because he chooses to unzip his fly when he shouldn't. So whatever. At least now the all day long cable news channels, so-called, won't have Gary, not Gary, but, John Edwards to push around. I don't know. I tuned in to MSNBC as I am wont to do most days at some part of the day, because I do find their coverage of whatever kind of fun. And they said the verdict was in on one of the counts, and they had a camera set up in front of, maybe you saw this, camera set up in front of the federal courthouse there in Greensboro? Is it Greensboro? Raleigh? I don't know. Greensboro, I guess. People running this way and running that way. And then it turns out that, when they said we have a verdict, they meant that literally. They didn't have six verdicts. They had a verdict. I just have to wonder. I lived in North Carolina twice, or if they say in North Carolina, I lived there twice. So I just wonder about the jury. I wonder if the jury was just totally confused. Of course, they deliberated for what, 6 days? Why am I talking about this? This hour is being sponsored by a man named Gerard Brown. This was very unusual. As a matter of fact, the entire night, all 3 hours, we got a letter from him, not an email letter, and he doesn't have a website. But he's sponsoring all 3 hours tonight, Gerard Brown for President campaign. He said, my campaign so far has hundreds of people who say they will vote for me, mostly their relatives. However, some are total strangers. I'm claiming to have more experience than any other candidate, having lived 83-plus years. I was a reporter for UPI, radio and television, a tax collector in New Mexico, legislative and press aide to U.S. Congressman Johnny Walker of New Mexico, the Democrat, director of information for the Disabled American Veterans, and director of information for Pinellas County. I was in the Army for 6.5 years, paratrooper, 24th Infantry, heavy mortar forward observer, captured, spent 3 years prisoner of war. I'm a member of the ex-prisoners of war group, the Tiger Survivors. I have registered with the Federal Elections Commission and am ready for the campaign to get underway. Okay. Gerard, G-E-R-A-R-D, Brown, for president. I don't have a website to direct you to, but we will mention Mr. Brown's letter here a couple more times tonight. And if he does come up with a website, we'll be happy to tell you about it. Thanks, Gerard. Regarding the story last night about the preacher, the snake handler, I got an email from Jenny, and she wrote, I know I'm going to go to hell for this, but I'm laughing my ass off over this one. And she writes, the power of God? I don't think so. More like the power of venom. She says, what an idiot. I'd say he's a candidate for a Darwin Award. But since he lives in Kentucky, he was probably married young and already has a bunch of kids. For anyone who doesn't know, the Darwin Awards, you can look it up, darwinawards.com, but from their rules page, this. The Darwin Awards commemorate individuals who protect our gene pool by making the ultimate sacrifice of their own lives. By eliminating themselves in an extraordinarily idiotic manner, thereby improving our species' chance of long-term survival. In other words, they are cautionary tales about people who kill themselves in really stupid ways, and in doing so, significantly improve the gene pool by eliminating themselves from the human race. Thanks, Jenny. No, I don't want to get started on that story again. Oh, my God. Joel, this is kind of in your face, Seattle, but I'll share it with you. He sent it to me and Norm Goldman and Tom Hartman. I don't know if Norm or Tom have read it, but here you go. Message to a shocked Seattle from Joel. You should be shocked, but not surprised today. When your tax dollars fund, without even your slightest protest, what is called by Martin Luther King the leading purveyor of violence in the world today, you should not whine when the assassin-in-chief sends your drones and plenty of other lethal hardware to kill innocent families around the world. Joel's referring to the fact that, I guess, these drones are made by one of the aircraft companies in Seattle. He goes on, Seattle is no longer the so-called liberal refuge it once thought itself to be, and has knuckled under to the prevailing militarism of the most recent decades. The mental illness of one individual is the microcosm of the warrior madness we all live in the midst of today, a great evil working its way toward our destruction. No other way to put that. This is our road to Dresden, to Nuremberg, to Berlin, 1945. We lack the excuse they may have had, that history had no precedent to warn them of the fate that they were bringing on themselves, until your own witness against war and violence is total and uncompromising. Expect more shocking glances in the mirror like we had yesterday. Joel. Yeah, it's just becoming pointless to comment on these mass killings, especially in this country, especially when you consider that immediately after these mass killings, gun sales skyrocket. Oh,
It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Another thing I saw today, it was the damnedest thing. I see this ceremony going on at the White House where official oil painting of George W. Bush and Laura Bush are being unveiled with Obama there and Mrs. Obama and a bunch of people and everybody being jokey and ass grabby and very funny and ha ha ho ho he he. And it was a very hideous moment for me to see this. Very hideous. Here's George W. Bush, a mass murderer, a killer, a war criminal. And here's Barack Obama, who is heading an international terror organization run out of the White House to murder people at will. And I'll be a son of a bitch. There they are. Like I say, grab-assing and joking and ha-ha-ha, putting up a picture, ha-ha-ha-ha. Well, Sam didn't like it either. Sam writes, Bush 43 presidential portrait unveiled today. Thief, liar, war criminal, torturer, Cheney's and the Republicans' puppet. A real effing jokester, an utter sociopath. And Obama? Well, he came through with his usual jive-ass, pretentious drone when he should have ignored this entire non-occasion. Obama is listed under Einstein's definition of insanity, doing the same ridiculous thing over and over and over again, expecting different results. He's still hoping Pappy Bush will take him golfing with Bill Clinton. Obama should have shined a spotlight on this BS and made all the GD Republicans that pulled Bush's strings for 8 years host this photo op from hell. This should have taken place in Houston, not the White House. Mitt Romney, Karl Rove, Rumsfeld, Addison Yu, and the rest of the sociopaths that robbed this country blind and put our march to fascism, begun by Reagan and his evangelist Christers, on steroids. Sam. Yeah, every time I see something like that, I get a very queasy feeling in my stomach, and then, like Stephanie Miller says, a little bit of throw-up rises into the back of my throat. It's awful to watch that. I mean, what's the title of that? A couple of war criminals sitting around talking? Okay, you think that's a little harsh on Obama. I know you do. Let me see. Where's that thing from today's Times? Ah, here it is. Too much power for a president. New York Times says it's been clear for years the Obama administration believes the shadow war on terrorism gives it the power to choose targets for assassination, including Americans, without any oversight. On Tuesday, the Times revealed who was actually making the final decision on the biggest killings and drone strikes. President Obama himself. Mr. Obama has demonstrated that he can be thoughtful and far-sighted, but like all occupants of the Oval Office, he's a politician. Subject to the pressures of re-election, no one in that position should be able to unilaterally order the killing of American citizens or foreigners located far from a battlefield, depriving Americans of their due process rights without the consent of someone outside his political inner circle. How can the world know whether the targets chosen by this president or his successors are truly dangerous terrorists and not just people with the wrong associations? It's clear, for instance, that many of those rounded up after the September 11 attacks weren't terrorists. How can the world know whether this president or a successor truly pursued all methods short of assassination, or instead, to avoid a political charge of weakness, built up a tough-sounding list of kills? It's too easy to say that this is a national power of a commander-in-chief. The United States cannot be in a perpetual war on terror that allows lethal force against anyone, anywhere, for any perceived threat. That power is too great and too easily abused, as those who lived through the Bush administration will remember. Blah, 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 blah. They close their editorial by saying a unilateral campaign of death is untenable. To provide real assurance, President Obama should publish clear guidelines for targeting to be carried out by non-politicians, making assassination truly a last resort, and allow an outside court to review the evidence before placing Americans on a kill list. I can't believe I'm reading that in the New York Times. I can. We've been talking about this for weeks. And I keep getting emails from people that say, oh, man, come on, come off of, for Christ's sake. You're pushing this way too far. No, I'm not. I'm not pushing this far enough. This is where we live now. And if that bothers you as a reasonable thinking adult, please don't send me emails challenging my interpretation of a very clear law that Barack Obama signed and is using. So, you know, to see the New York Times editorial board coming out like this, it's like, why not call for his impeachment? Why not just go the extra mile here? You didn't do it on Bush, did you?
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
This night is being sponsored by Gerard Brown for President Campaign. Gerard Brown for President Campaign. He is 83 plus years old. He has hundreds of people now who say they're going to vote for him. He has a very interesting history, including service in the military, plus as a journalist, a tax collector, and a press aide to a U.S. congressman. He is a member of the prisoner of war, too. A member of the ex-prisoners of war group, the Tiger Survivors. Gerard Brown. I Googled the name, and I don't have a website for you, but if I get one, I will let you know. Thanks, Gerard. As you know, former Liberian President Charles Taylor was convicted of war crimes and crimes against humanity. That conviction came down, about a week, 10 days ago? Regarding the atrocities committed in Sierra Leone. And Charles Taylor is now stressing the need for former U.S. President George W. Bush to be prosecuted for similar crimes. Huh? According to the New Dawn, which is a online newspaper published in Monrovia, Liberia, this. Taylor made the call in his first post-verdict special statement he read before judges of the Special Court for Sierra Leone yesterday. He said he agreed with the judge's statement that the April 26th historic judgment reinforces the new reality that heads of state will be held accountable for war crimes and other international crimes, that with leadership comes not just power and authority, but also responsibility and accountability, and that no person, no matter how powerful, is above the law. He agrees with that, huh? Well, good for you. He was sentenced to 50 years, by the way. Then, Taylor, who obviously sees unfairness in his prosecution, not that he's innocent, but he sees unfairness in comparison to, say, ex-President George W. Bush, he stated the following, quote, President George W. Bush not too long ago ordered torture and admitted to doing so. Torture is a crime against humanity. The United States has refused to prosecute him. Is he above the law? Where is the fairness? End quote. The paper goes on to say, although it is not known whether the International Criminal Court in The Hague or the justice-oriented international community will seek Bush's prosecution as a result of Taylor's comments. This last year, when Bush was about to make a visit to three African countries, Ethiopia, Tanzania, and Zambia, Amnesty International called on those countries to arrest Mr. Bush and detain him for international crimes, including torture. In October 2011, Amnesty and Human Rights Watch jointly called upon the Canadian government to arrest and prosecute Bush when he went to Canada. In January 2010, Professor Francis Boyle, the College of Law, University of Illinois, filed a complaint with the International Criminal Court against Bush and at least five of his senior officials for allegedly committing international crimes. Blah, 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 blah. This is the reason they hate us, George. It's not because we buy houses, you dumbass. It's because people like you who lead the United States government, or people like Barack Obama, who now leads the United States government, can order anytime, any place, under any circumstances, a village wiped out, a family wiped out, a person killed. There is no such thing as any restrictions whatsoever. If there are restrictions on these U.S. heads of state, then they conveniently have somebody in their Justice Departments write a memo. And writing the memo legalizes the act of murder they're about to commit. And it is an act of murder. I realize murder is a legal term, but it is an act of murder. So it is kind of understandable how Charles Taylor, thug and son of a bitch that he was, is now calling for a little bit of fairness in the operation of the International Criminal Court. That's understandable. But I would say to Mr. Taylor, if I had a chance to talk to him, that that's never going to happen. Ever. It's not going to happen. And the reasons are many, but mostly because most of the country has found it expeditious to kiss the ass of the United States repeatedly and to put up with whatever we throw at them. Sometimes there is resistance, as in Vietnam, and when there is a resistance, then the mighty security state of the United States is beaten into a bloody, whimpering pulp. But as far as International Criminal Court, I think it is safe to say that these criminals that have run the United States government and continue to run the United States government are home free, and they know it. Can you imagine what would happen if a bunch of Muslims sitting around and decided, hey, let's go, you know, we're sick of the U.S. killing our people. We're sick of the U.S. having troops in our holy land. We're sick of the treatment of the Palestinians. We're sick, sick, sick. We have to do something. What do you want to do? Let's assassinate some people. Who? Tell you what, let's wipe out a whole goddamn building. What? Yeah, let's blow up a building. Let's attack the Pentagon. Let's just go for the jugular. Well, that's pretty outrageous, is it? And then they carry it out. And what's the result? What we now have. An endless war. On a noun. And it's never going to stop. And you know it's not going to stop. So when Obama or Bush or whoever targets people, it's purely justified. Well, come on, Mike. God damn, they killed 3,000 people in the United States. What do you expect? Not this. What did I expect? I expected, I really did expect, that the people held, that were responsible for it, responsible for the actual attack, the ones that weren't dead, would be tracked down and put on trial, and since it's in the United States, executed. That's what I thought would happen. But, you know, the story is just so wobbly to begin with. Who did the hit job on the United States? And the training didn't take place in Afghanistan. The training took place in Wisconsin and California and Florida. It's just maddening. I mean, it's crazy producing. Crazy. So, anyway, the consensus is growing, and I'm not talking about these right-wing pieces of fecal material who infest Fox News. I'm talking about the consensus is growing among people who are still a little rational, like you, like me. Editorial board at the Times, a few other people, and the usual gang out there on the internet, Chris Hedges, Chris Floyd, you know the people, Bob Kincaid, you know, just on and on. People who are saying, how can we celebrate the prosecution of someone like Charles Taylor when we had George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and their murder posse? How can we talk about justice and a legal system? Oh, I know. Nobody else on earth does it, Malloy. You know the Sharia law. You know what they're going to do. You know what they do to somebody like you? They cut your goddamn head off. Yeah, they probably would. So we decapitate them first, right? And if innocent people are killed, well, they're not innocent. I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. I don't. And I know probably a large segment of this audience is tired of hearing about this. I understand. But I think we all know one fact. A, George W. Bush will never be put on trial for the crimes he committed. And B, there is nothing stopping Barack Obama or his successors from doing exactly the same thing. Nothing. Unlike Bush, Obama says he has studied Augustine and Aquinas and all the people who tried to come up with the idea of just war. And so therefore he takes responsibility, and it's a heavy moral burden and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, things have to be done.
Won't you stand by the flag? Was the question unasked? Won't you join in and fight with the Allies? What could we say? We're only 25 years old, with 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the cold. This kind of life makes that violence unthinkable. We'd like to play hockey, have kids and grow old. Fighters for Texaco.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, this hour has been brought to us by Gerard Brown for President campaign. Look him up, Gerard Brown for President. From Dr. Saxman, regarding the trial and the verdict today of John Edwards, And Dr. Saxon writes, this goes on trial and makes big news. How about Romney lying over and over again? Are the millions pumped into the elections now because of Citizens United? Or sending people letters in Florida saying that they are not citizens and can't vote? There's no marching, no outrage. Then you have Facebook people post things like, with gratitude comes more of the beauty of your inner walnut, and God gives you all that your heart desires, including more walnuts. I'm dark. Sorry. Dr. Saxman. Justice Department finally stepped into that mess. This evening, as a matter of fact. According to Bridget, it just happened within the past couple hours. Justice Department sent a letter to Florida Secretary of State Ken Detzner demanding the state cease purging its voting rolls because the process it is using has not been cleared under the Voting Rights Act. Department of Justice also said that Florida voter roll purge violates the National Voter Registration Act, which stipulates that voter roll maintenance should have ceased 90 days before an election, which gives Florida's August 14 primary May 16th is when it should have stopped. Five of Florida's counties are subject to the Voting Rights Act. That's because they denied African Americans the right to vote, you know, like the old South. But the state never sought permission from either the Justice Department or a federal court to implement its voter roll maintenance program. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. You can find the letter at TPM, talkingpointsmemo.org, I think it is. But what has been going on, this filthy Nazi Rick Scott is going to do what Jeb Bush did for his brother in 2000, totally subvert and pervert the voting process in Florida. Florida being a state with an awful lot of electoral votes, and since we all play that stupid goddamn game, the Electoral College game, it's very important where these states wind up. I'm telling you, this election, maybe this election, if Romney is declared the winner, maybe this will either do one or two things. It'll make everybody just yawn and stay in line in the march to fascism, or it may make people realize that we are screwed unless we do something. Now, I kind of believe it's not going to be the latter because this country is asleep. Where half of us are asleep because we use sleep as a form of escape from this craziness, from this unemployment, from foreclosures, from a failing school system. Some of us are asleep because we have to get up at 3 in the morning to go to a minimum wage job. But I just wonder at what point. Oh, forget it. Christ, I've been talking about this. I've been talking about this for 7 years. You know, wake up, Malloy, and smell the tear gas. There is no point where the American people are going to respond. That's not us. That's not us. If we were Egyptians, maybe. If we were Syrians, maybe. If we were Cubans back in the day, maybe. But we're not. We don't have any revolutionary fervor or zeal. We don't, you know, it's just, oh, well, you know, I can't, you know, they're all alike. Yeah, boo, bee, bee, boo, ba. Maybe they're all alike. So why not change the system? Why not change the system? Make it more, you know, let's make apportioned voting or proportional voting. Let's go to a parliamentary system. Let's blah, 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 blah. It's just pissing in the wind, and I know it is. Every time I bring this up, every time I do the program, I think this program is kind of for the people who participate by listening or calling or emailing or whatever. It's kind of a vent, I guess. Vent, V-E-N-T. It's a vent, or an escape valve, or a, I don't know, like a, like the old pressure cookers, you know. But it's not for me. So in Florida, once again, as is going on even as we speak in many states, happened in Ohio. Ohio turned out to be run, Ken Blackwell, just by a gang of goddamn right-wing neo-Nazi pigs. And it's happening. It's happening all across the country. They're trying to do it in Pennsylvania. They're damn sure doing it in Florida. Alabama, forget Alabama. The Deep South, forget about it. Forget about it. It's gone. What's gone? The right to vote. The right to vote and have your vote counted. As some, what is it, Stalin said, anybody can vote. Who counts the votes? I know, I'm paraphrasing it. Don't send me what he really said. I don't care. You get the point. Wow, man, I didn't realize that was going to get so dark like Dr. Saxman. I'm dark, man. Yeah, well, me too. We'll be back. I'm going to try to think of something funny over the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Are tonight being sponsored by the presidential campaign of one Gerard Brown. Gerard Brown. According to a snail mail letter he sent me, he has hundreds of people who say they're going to vote for him. Mostly they are relatives. However, some are total strangers. He has more experience than any other candidate because he's 83 plus years old. He is an Army veteran. Former POW. Journalists, all sorts of things. Gerard Brown. When we get a website on him, we will pass that on to you, okay? Edie in Atlanta earlier today had sent me an email about the Edwards verdict. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is because it never should have been a trial anyway. But Edie wrote, I am glad the jury in the case against Edwards was able to tell the difference between adultery, for which he was not charged, and these trumped-up charges from the Bush state attorney and allowed to continue under the cowardly duo of Obama and Holder on crimes that never happened. Melanie Sloan, crew, among many others who know what they're talking about, said all along that none of this drama was illegal. Of course, hundreds of bankers who nearly destroyed the nation and the Bush crime family go merrily about with their privileged lives. Of course, the Edwards trial was a sideshow. And our bought and paid for media, especially the television branch of that sick enterprise, followed right along. Didn't they? Think of the hours dedicated to the Edwards trial. And I bet you can't find a person out there who knew what the trial was about, unless they were sitting in the jury or in the courtroom. In the meantime, from the Associated Press, I don't even know if I should bring this up. Let me hold off for a second. I guess you heard about there's all kinds of craziness on television during the day. Are you aware of that, Truth Seeker? I mean, stuff that when you hear it, you think, Mike Bloomberg again, the billionaire mayor of New York City, now wants to ban sodas over 16 ounces because of the sugar content. Of course, 16 ounces of orange juice has a similar sugar content. And he doesn't want to ban 16-ounce milkshakes or 16-ounce pies or cakes. What in the hell is going on? And he sits there, and Diane Sawyer on, what is she, ABC, sat there and conducted an interview with this schmuck tonight. Like that's news! John Edwards and banning 16-ounce sodas? Because we're all fat. I'll tell you something that Mike Bloomberg ought to be talking about and Diane Sawyer ought to be talking about. The world's air. The world's air. You know, the crap that we breathe. You ready for this? I don't know. You may be too fragile for this tonight, but I'll try. The world's air has reached what scientists are calling a troubling new milestone for carbon dioxide. This is from the Associated Press. Monitoring stations across the Atlantic or Arctic this spring are measuring more than 400 parts per million of the heat-trapping gas in the atmosphere. The number isn't quite a surprise because it's been rising at an accelerating pace. Years ago, it passed the 350 parts per million mark that many scientists say is the highest safe level for carbon dioxide. It now stands globally at 395. And so far, only the Arctic has reached that 400 level. But according to the scientists, the rest of the world is soon going to follow. Jim Butler, Global Monitoring Director at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Earth System Research Lab in Boulder, Colorado, said, quote, "The fact that it's 400 ppm is significant. It's just a reminder to everybody that we haven't fixed this and we're still in trouble." Well, Jim, who in the hell suggested we have fixed it? Who in the hell suggested we're not in trouble? When the tar sands, Alberta tar sands and the XL pipeline are put into full operating mode, it's all goddamn over anyway. What's over? Life on Earth as we know it. What? What did you just say? Life on Earth as we know it. Life on Earth as we know it. It's all over? Yeah. You, Christ, my lawyer, starting to sound like Art Bell. Oh, my God. Carbon dioxide is the chief greenhouse gas and stays in the atmosphere for 100 years. Some carbon dioxide is natural, mainly from decomposing dead plants and animals. Before the industrial age, levels were around 275 parts per million. Yeah, I know. And methane is even more of a destroyer. And as the permafrost north of the Arctic Circle melts, think about Siberia. Here is this massive, massive frozen tundra that's not going to be frozen much longer. And the methane. What? The methane. What about it? It's more a bad thing than carbon dioxide. So what's going to happen? We're all going to die! Oh, really? Oh, come on, Malloy, for Christ's sake. For more than 60 years, CO2 readings have been in the 300s, except in urban areas where levels are skewed. But the burning of fossil fuels such as coal for electricity and oil for gasoline has caused the overwhelming bulk of the man-made increase in carbon in the air, according to scientists. No! God's not really anything happening to the planet. Just don't you worry. God has a plan. What's the plan? Well, he's going to kill everybody. He's going to kill everybody. That's the plan? Yeah! Why? Because you're a bunch of goddamn sinners. That's why! Oh. According to scientists, it's been at least 800,000 years, probably more, since Earth saw carbon dioxide levels in the 400s. This is what the scientists are saying. See, right there! Right what? 800,000 years, you're out of your goddamn mind. Planet's only 6,000 years old, or maybe 7. Okay. Readings are coming in at 400 ppm or higher all over the Arctic. They've been recorded in Alaska, Greenland, Norway, Iceland, and even Mongolia. But levels change with the seasons, and these numbers will drop a bit in the summer when plants suck up carbon dioxide, according to NOAA. Not the guy on the ark. So, the yearly average for these northern stations likely will be a little lower than 400, and so will the global number. Woohoo! So we're all home free, right? Well, I'm standing by. Actually, no. But the water doesn't flow. It boils with every poison. Fascinating story here about 400 parts per million carbon dioxide molecules in the atmosphere. I guess that's what that means, right? Huh? The Arctic, according to Peter Tans, a senior National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association or Administration, NOAA, Peter Tans. He said the Arctic is the leading indicator in global warming, both in carbon dioxide in the air and the effects. And he says this is the first time the entire Arctic is that high. Mr. Tans called reaching the 400 number depressing. Why? I mean, we're about to start all over. We've had extinctions before. Of course, I don't like the fact that I have little children in my family. You may also, who are going to have to deal with this. Mr. Tan's called the reaching the number 400 depressing. Said it was a troubling milestone. Carnegie Institute ecologist Chris Field said, quote, it's an important threshold. It's an indication that we're in a different world. Ronald Prin. Now all these names they're giving, these are the lying sons of bitches who don't know what they're talking about. This is what the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Network tells you. These guys are crazy. It's all a conspiracy to destroy a glorious, wonderful, blood-dripping, fanged capitalism. So don't listen to this. Ronald Prin, an atmospheric science professor at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, said the 400 number is a psychological milestone as well as a scientific one. He said, we think in hundreds and we're poking our heads above 400. Back to Peter Tanz, he said that the readings show how much the Earth's atmosphere and its climate are being affected by humans. Global carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuels hit a record high of 34.8 billion tons in 2011, which is up 3.2%. That's according to the International Energy Agency. Some left-wing organization, right? The agency said it's becoming unlikely that the world can achieve the European goal of limiting global warming to just 2 degrees based on increasing pollution and greenhouse gas levels. Former President Al Gore said in an email, quote, the news today that some stations have measured concentrations above 400 ppm in the atmosphere is further evidence that the world's political leaders, with a few honorable exceptions, are failing catastrophically to address the climate crisis. History will not understand or forgive them. But, come on. Political dynamics in the United States mean there's no possibility of significant restrictions on man-made greenhouse gases, no matter what the levels are. Said Jerry Taylor, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, forget about it. And Myron E. Bell at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, a neo-fascist organization, said, hey, these milestones are always worth noting. As carbon dioxide levels have continued to increase, global temperatures flattened out, contrary to the models used by, climate scientists and the, United Nations. Don't worry about it. The guy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, the right-winger, he said that temperatures have not risen since 1998, which, by the way, was unusually hot. Oh, okay. Now, temperature records, of course, show that 2005 and 2010 were warmer than 1998, and the entire decade of 2000 to 2009 was the warmest on record. But never mind. The Competitive Enterprise Institute and its filthy, flesh-eating, son-of-a-bitch puppet, Myron E. Bell, will tell you, nah, not true. What, you have numbers? You have records? They're doctored. They're fixed. Not true. Don't worry about it. Bunch of goddamn liberals. What's the matter with you guys, huh? Now, excuse me, I gotta go tune in the Hannity program, man.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
This hour is being sponsored by the presidential campaign of Gerard Brown. It's the Gerard Brown for President campaign. He sent me a letter. His campaign so far has hundreds of people who say they will vote for him. Mostly they are relatives, but some are total strangers. He is claiming to have more experience than any other candidate because he is 83-plus years old. He's been a reporter, a tax collector, legislative and press aide to a U.S. member of Congress, director of information for the disabled American veterans, in the Army for 6.5 years, paratrooper, served in the 24th ID, member of the, and he spent 3 years as a POW. He's a member of the ex-prisoners of war group, the Tiger Survivors. He's registered with the Federal Elections Commission and is ready for the campaign to get underway. Well, Gerard, so are we. So are we, pal. Let me know when it's launched. From Brad. No, not Brad Friedman. Mike, love your show. Listen every night. By podcast. I've been doing that for approximately 5 years. Always impressed how you have the right words for a situation. That's why I'm writing about a possible story for your show, maybe on church night. I missed this last night. Please take a look at this story about the Catholic Church excommunicating the mother and the doctors who performed an abortion on a 9-year-old girl, but no steps taken against the stepfather who raped her. And there's more to the email, but the story is particularly horrific. I can't think of a more disgusting, violent organization than the Catholic Church. The church hates children. They really, really hate children. Children are sex objects to be hated. That's all. So, the story is from Brazil. Declaring that life must always be protected, a senior Vatican cleric has defended the Catholic Church's decision to excommunicate the mother and the doctors of a 9-year-old rape victim who had a life-saving abortion in Brazil. Cardinal Giovanni Battista Rey, who heads the Pontifical Commission for Latin America, told reporters that although the girl became pregnant after apparently being raped by her stepfather, the fetuses in her had the right to live and could not be eliminated. In an interview with the Italian newspaper La Stampa, the cardinal added, "It is a sad case, but the real problem is that the twin fetuses conceived were two innocent persons. Life must always be protected." Police believe the girl was sexually assaulted for years by her stepfather, possibly since she was 6. That she was 4 months pregnant with twins emerged only after she was taken to hospital complaining of severe stomach pains. Oh, the controversy presents a PR nightmare for the Vatican, it says here. Oh, the unnamed girl's mother and doctors were excommunicated for agreeing to the emergency abortion. Yet the church has not taken any steps against the stepfather who is in custody. The Archbishop, Jose Cardoso Sobrinho, the conservative regional archbishop for Pernambuco, where the girl was rushed to hospital, has said that the man would not be thrown out of the church because although he had allegedly committed a heinous crime, the church took the view that the abortion, the elimination of an innocent fetus, was more serious. I mean, this is sick. This is sick. The president of Brazil has gotten involved in this. Luiz Ignacio Lula da Silva has waded into the row. He said, quote, as a Christian and a Catholic, I deeply regret that a bishop of the Catholic Church has such a conservative attitude. The doctors did what had to be done, saved the life of a little girl of 9 years. In this case, the medical profession was more right than the church, end quote. Tell you what, Mr. Lula da Silva, why don't you throw the Catholic Church out of your country? It has done nothing in your country but pillage, rape, loot, burn, destroy, and enslave. Why don't you, come on, da Silva, show some leadership. Get on the blower. Tell the Pope, get your goddamn rapist, murder, sons of bitches out of my country. Go ahead. Do it. Oh, never mind. One of the doctors involved in this abortion, Rivaldo Albuquerque, has raised the prospect of public clashes at his local church, telling the nation's main TV network in Brazil, Globo, that he would keep going to mass there regardless of the archbishop's order. The young girl at the center of the case escaped excommunication only because, are you ready? She escaped excommunication, are you ready? Because in the eyes of the church, she's still a child. The stepfather, who is 23, was arrested last week, apparently trying to escape to another region of the country. Police say he is also suspected of abusing the girl's handicapped 14-year-old sister. He is in protective custody and, if convicted, faces up to 15 years in prison. But when he dies, he will get to see Jesus. Hi, Jesus. Who are you? I rape children. What are you, a priest? My God. So the little girl will not be excommunicated because the church recognizes that she is a child. But the little girl's mother and the physician are excommunicated. Be gone. You're out of the church. Oh, no. And the doctor says, no, I'm not playing that game. I want to go to heaven, so I'm going to keep going to church. Let's see if they can shut me out of the church. Why doesn't this doctor perform some abortions on the local archbishops? No? Can't be done? How about whatever is closest to that that can be performed on a male? Ooh. What are you advocating, Malloy? That. Oh, and in Milwaukee, you hear about this? The Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York authorized payments of as much as $20,000 to sexually abusive priests in an incentive for them to agree to dismissal from the priesthood when he, Dolan, was the Archbishop of Milwaukee. Here's some money. You did what? You raped children? Aw, you just couldn't control it, huh? Were there boys or girls? Oh, it doesn't matter. You raped children. Well, here's 20 grand. Now, will you please just go away? Here's some money. Go away. Now, that story is from here. Questioned at the time at the news, that one particularly notorious pedophile cleric had been given a payoff to leave the priesthood, Cardinal Dolan, then the Archbishop of Milwaukee, responded that such an inference was false, preposterous, and unjust. But a document unearthed during bankruptcy proceedings of the Archdiocese of Milwaukee and made public by victims' advocates reveals that the Archdiocese did, in fact, make such payments to multiple accused priests to encourage them to seek dismissal, thereby allowing the church to remove them from the payroll. How can any of you profess to be a member of this sick, degenerate organization? How do you do this? I'm really curious. You know, we laugh at the snake handlers. Hey, another one got bit. Ow! Well, bye! Goodbye! But this... How do you Catholics get up on Sunday morning or whenever you do this and walk into one of these temples of doom? How do you do it? How do you look at your priest and not think, I wonder who he's stupin'? I don't know how you do it, but if I were of a religious bent, I would say you're all goddamn crazy.
This is my private place. Everything is neat and clean. The skeletons are hidden in the closet. This is my private place. Can you get me out of here?
A two, a three, a four.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
Take a long walk through a company town. Used to be solid ground. Nobody was ever gonna get sized down. Originally. When all those dollars they hit.
10 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by the Gerard Brown for President campaign. You can't go to his website because I don't think he has one yet. But his campaign has garnered hundreds of people who say they will vote for him, including not just relatives, but also some total strangers. And he claims to have more experience than any other candidate because he has lived 83-plus years. Sounds like a nice guy. He's registered with the FEC, and he's ready for the campaign to get underway. And by God, so am I. Gerard, just keep us posted. And we'll... We'll let folks know. We will. Now, Timothy Dolan, the Cardinal of New York, he's a cardinal now. Of course, he also was involved in sanctioning or permitting rape of children. What do you do with a guy like this? Oh, you may, he's an archbishop. You make him a cardinal. And some of you people get highly offended when I say one of the organizing principles of this filthy organization is child rape. And you just, what were you talking about, Malloy? What about Mother Teresa? What about liberation theology? That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about this filthy, hate-filled, child-molesting, murderous organization called the Catholic Church. Come on. Now, Dolan is now president of the National Bishops Conference. And he, according to New York Times, fast becoming the nation's most high-profile Roman Catholic cleric. And for this article, he did not respond to several requests for comment that he had been paying off child rapists. Paying off child. Doesn't that make him an accessory after the fact? Shouldn't Cardinal Dolan have his ass thrown in jail forever, along with these other miserable bastards? A victims advocacy group, the Survivors Network of those abused by priests, you've probably heard of it, referred to as SNAP, sent a letter of protest to the current Archbishop of Milwaukee yesterday asking, quote, in what other occupation, especially one working with families and operating schools and youth programs, is an employee given a cash bonus for raping children? In what other business? What other occupation is somebody given a cash bonus for child rape? Well, if there is one, you can bet your ass it's religious. Experts in the Catholic Church's response to sexual abuse say that payouts to dismissed priests are not uncommon. You see, when a man becomes a priest, the church is expected to care for his needs for a lifetime. That's why they keep giving him more children to rape. That's why they move him to a different parish. Oh, Father Bunghold, you did what? Oh, for heaven's sake, we just can't leave you alone with these kids. All right, let's move him to Phoenix. Why? Someone, please, can you send me an email? Can you tell me why these people are not in jail? Can you tell me? Statute of limitations, is that it? What about Dolan, an accessory after the fact of child rape? And this son of a bitch gets promoted! Nah, nobody cares. Nobody cares. These newly revealed documents that Cardinal Dolan will not comment on to the New York Times contain the minutes of a meeting of the Finance Council of the Milwaukee Archdiocese from March 7th, 2003, which Cardinal Dolan then, I don't know if he was a cardinal then, maybe not, he attended. The Archdiocese was facing a flood of potential lawsuits by people who had been anally raped. And the church's insurance company was refusing to cover the costs because it said the church had been negligent? Oh, the church? The very same church that says queers shouldn't get married. Why not? Because... Just because! The minutes noted that priests who could not be assigned to other parishes because of their history of violent anal penetration of children were still receiving full salaries. The minutes of that meeting say that those at the meeting discussed a proposal to offer $20,000 to these filthy bastards. And instead of a salary, if they would get out of the priesthood, and instead of a salary, they would then receive $1,250 a month in pensions. Oh, and health insurance. Now, the children that had been raped, anally assaulted, vaginally assaulted, their little bodies ripped and torn by these sons of bitches, what is to happen to them? Oh, well, nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And if one of them gets pregnant because of these rapist priests, and the parents decide to have an abortion, then the parents will be excommunicated, and the priest will continue to draw his monthly stipend and find other children to anally and vaginally assault. And this goes on and on and on with no let up, no break. It just continues. As we speak, there are priests out there right now raping children repeatedly, vigorously. And you call this filthy goddamn organization a church? Wow. 7 past the hour. I was going to tell you a story tonight here, but I just don't think this is a proper night. I'll let it wait till tomorrow because I've just been beating up on you so severely tonight. I should talk about the Edwards verdicts today. This hour being sponsored by Gerard Brown for President campaign. By the way, the phones are open, 877-996-2556 if you want to join in. Gerard Brown for President campaign. Gerard sounds like a good man. He's 83 plus years old. He therefore has much more experience than any of these turkeys running who are younger than he. And he has a sterling record of public service, including having been in the United States Army for 6.5 years. That would put him, I guess, part of the Korea generation. He was captured, spent 3 years as a POW. He's a member of the ex-prisoners of war group called the Tiger Survivors. And he doesn't have a website, so I will let you know when he does. But you can look him up somewhere. Gerard, G-E-R-A-R-D, Brown, for president. You go, Gerard. A couple emails here, okay? This is from Kilroy in D.C. Kilroy writes, Mike, I have a 17-year-old niece who is out as a lesbian. She's a very wise kid, in spite of the fact that she's growing up in the Bible Belt and is currently go through that stage in adolescent life that drives all parents of all kinds absolutely effing bonkers. It will soon be my privilege to spend some time with her and play the role of hip uncle. I am heavily involved in politics. She has shown some interest in this, and I'd like to give her something good to put on her iPod. Several years ago, when she was somewhere around 8 or 9 years old, I downloaded as many of the MP3s of your live reading of 1984 from Ben Birch's website as I could find, and began splicing and dicing them into some sort of continuous listening experience, including the bumper music and certain segments before and after where you would talk, sometimes at length, about the material you were reading. I intended to give this to my niece right about when she's this age and at this level of maturity. I never finished the project, and I'm about to pick it up again. Now, I'm wondering if you or Kathy or Ben have a complete copy of just that reading of 1984 in MP format that I can give to my niece. If you do, I would pay for it. If you do not, I'd be willing to finish my try at it and then send it to Kathy so that you two can repackage it and sell it yourself. Or just put it online for free. Or whatever you want to do with it. I noticed on the White Rose page that Ben Birch has started to do something similar, but he only got so far. My point to you is that I'm going to deliver your reading of 1984 to my niece one way or another, and I can either pay you for your copy or send you mine when I'm done with it. That reading was truly a seminal event on radio. I'd be interested to know if anyone who has simply read an entire book on live radio, broadcast radio, has ever reached so many years before. If they have, it wasn't that book at that particular dark moment. I want to share that experience with my niece. I'm hoping that either you can help me do that, or failing that, I can send you what I give her so that you can share it with others. That was some badass blank, Mike. Kilroy, I do not have any of it. Nor does Kathy. I think Ben Birch still has most of the MP3s. You have to understand something, and this is just in way of enlightening you as to what we deal with here at the Molloy Broadcast Center. Kathy still uses mini discs. The bumper music that you hear, you think that's coming from a computer? Or from you know, the music coming, it's not coming from anything other than mini discs. So, I tell you that to let you know the primitive nature of what we use here. It's incredible. I don't know how we continue to feed this program to the satellite uplink company. You know, once they get it, it's fine. It goes on to the satellite. It is picked off by whoever has the right transponder or receiver. I don't know what it is. I don't care. I really don't care. But we don't have any access to it, Kilroy. If you do put something together, it's probably going to be kind of mishmashy. I think it would work well for your niece. Just give her something. Of course, you know, for $100 you can buy a Kindle and just download 1984 and give it to her. If you are looking for that experience of having it read live on radio, sure. Good luck with that. The only thing I can tell you is that it might be difficult. It only took us, how long did it take? It was about 3 months, Kathy, to do that. 3 months, 4 months, I forget. 3 months, maybe. But we had different levels every night. This is back when we were still working from a remote studio. Molly was 18 months old, and, you know, in the middle of a show, she'd start screaming, and Kathy would have to bring out the boob and try to feed her and run the, and keep the levels right. And it's just too much. Trust me, it's a very... nobody ever supported that except the people who heard it. I remember we asked Air America, listen, can you get somebody on your sales staff to notify a bookseller? We were in New York then, and I think Chicago. Get a bookseller who will buy some advertising around this 8-minute reading that we're going to do every night. Nah. This program has never gotten the kind of support, and it's because of me. I'm just an irritation. But that was, you know, that was very interesting to do, to read that particular book. We thought about doing Animal Farm, but there are too many voices in Animal Farm. In 1984, there were just two male voices and one female voice. Well, there were three male voices, the shopkeeper. And that was it. So, Kilroy in D.C., if you do put something together, yeah, send it to me. I'll, I don't know, we'll put it up on our website or something. So, Air America. Right. All right, we'll come to your calls in just a second. This flap that Obama got himself involved in, referring when he was giving a medal to an officer in the Polish underground, Jan Kozalewski. He was one of the first people to relay an eyewitness account of the death camps to the world. And in giving the award, Obama mentioned the death camps in Poland, the Polish death camp. He called it a Polish death camp, because it was a death camp and it was in Poland. You know, the Treblinka was in Poland. The Sobibor was in Poland. Majdanek was in Poland. Belzec was in Poland. Auschwitz and Birkenau were in Poland. So he talked about a Polish death camp, and all hell broke loose. Of course, the right-wing scum and filth and cockroaches in this country just jumped on it. He didn't say the Nazi death camps built in Poland, did he? I want to mention something else about that when we come back. Then we're coming to your phone call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
No, that's not. That's great. See what I mean about mini discs? People out there going, what? What the hell is a mini disc? What are you talking about? Is that like an 8-track? Every week or so at our P.O. box, I get a publication called Change Links, progressive newspaper. It's put together by a guy named John Johnson in L.A. I think it's in L.A. And I always read it. He's got a lot of stuff in there. Plus, he has a calendar of all sorts of progressive radical events going on in the on the coast. And like a lot of these organizations, he's struggling. He puts it on himself. It's just a little, you know, tabloid size folded over and folded over. And he puts a mailing label on it and uses bulk postage. Will you do me a favor and go to his website? It's change-links.org. Change-links, L-A-N-K-S.org. His name is John. He just sent me an email that said, in 1967, I was involved in SDS, among other groups. One night, a friend dropped by our apartment, the one I shared with another SDS member. The friend was a professional guitar player. He was raving about this new band he just heard at the Whiskey, a major club on the Sunset Strip. It was The Cream in one of their first U.S. gigs. The reason he wrote that, he's listening online, and we're playing some Cream music online tonight. He writes, in a few days, we bought their album, then played it until it wore out. Luckily, we had Hendrix's first LP also. Thanks for writing, John. I'm sorry I haven't gotten in touch with you before this. But if you're listening tonight, if you would do me a personal favor, go to his website, change-links.org, and take a look. Sign up to be on their mailing list or their email list, whatever you want. It's a nice website. He's got a lot of stuff in there. So would you do that for me? Change-links.org. Thank you. I appreciate it. Come on, I don't ask for much. I really don't. So please go to his website, change-links.org. Phone calls. Mike is in Salt Lake City listening on XM. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Yeah, say, listen, last night you were talking about those snake handlers,
yeah.
How they justify, you know, doing that from Mark 16 and 18. I went into Barnes & Noble bookstore and looked at a modern-day Catholic translation and a modern-day Protestant translation. Both said that that portion of the Bible is not found in the most ancient manuscripts.
Well, I wonder who put it in.
Yeah, I wonder, too. You know, if the Bible's the infallible word of God, then, it should not be changed around then.
Well, yes, and if pigs had wings, they would fly. I mean, you know, come on. It's not the infallible word of anybody.
Yeah, I read a book by Walter Martin called Kingdom of the Cults. This Christian evangelical guy. He's very knowledgeable about Bible and cults, and he doesn't like the Mormon religion. He calls it a non-Christian cult. And he even admits in his book, you know, that the King James Version of the Bible is not the perfect translation. For another example, Mike, on the King James Bible in the Our Father, it says, "For thine is the power and the glory forever and ever after the Our Father." That one also is not found in the most ancient of manuscripts.
Somebody's messing with the flying finger of God, then.
Yes, yes. So it doesn't make logical sense to tell me that the Bible, you know, is the inerrant word of God, like, you know, it's your paper pope. As the Roman Catholics have their pope, the Mormons have their prophet, and the Jehovah's Witnesses have their Bible and Watchtower Tract Society on how to interpret their Bible.
The thing that I love about the King James Version is first King James was a bisexual, so he slept with a lot of men, according to historical references and his own diaries, I guess. He also fathered a lot of children, so that must drive the evangelicals crazy if they're aware of that. The translation that he asked for, among people who rendered that translation, is my understanding, included people like Shakespeare, Christopher Marlowe. Let's see how many emails I get now telling me that the dates are impossible. but anyway, it cracks me up that so many rabid, fire-breathing, hate-filled evangelical Christians are using a version of the Bible commissioned by a man who liked to sleep with other men. Oh, well, go figure. Thanks, Mike. Website, but I don't know how to explain it to you. It's a third-party candidate website. Gerard, if you're listening, for God's sake, get a site that says GerardBrown.org or GerardBrownForPresident.org. Your site is, I don't know how Tom found it, but you got to do that, okay? Gerard wants to be our president. And he has, in his letter he wrote to me, he says he has hundreds of people who say they will vote for him. He admits most of them are relatives, but there are some total strangers. So get a website, Gerard, that where people can just type in your name and find it. Okay? Okay? Now, that advice is free. There's no charge for that. But Gerard is sponsoring the entire night tonight. Thanks, Gerard. So, it occurred to me that the Change Links progressive newspaper in L.A. is our state, KTLK does not take our third hour. And we're in the third hour. So all the people that I was hoping would hear this in L.A. are not going to hear it. So what I'm going to do is mention again tomorrow during the first hour of the program on Friday. But would you all do me a favor, especially this crew of this powerhouse crew that I have in the Malloy Skype and chat room? Facebook this out there, will you? This guy needs some readers, damn it. So Facebook it. Do it for me. Change-links.org. Change-links.org. Just get it out there. Will you do that? I know you will. Change-links.org. Let's see how far you can push this. They distribute 10,000 of these papers around L.A. They're free papers. But they need some ad support. They need some subscribers. If you get it through the mail, it costs a couple of bucks. But check out his website first, change-links.org, and then Facebook it around. Would you do that for me, please? Thank you very much. You people are great. Bucko is in Vancouver, British Columbia. Hello, Bucko.
Hi, Mike. I've been sitting here wondering what kind of story was so bad that you couldn't give it to us tonight. Is it the 20-year-old that's going to be stoned to death for adultery in Sudan?
No. Trust me on this. It's not.
Okay. Well, I was calling.
It's not a good story. I don't want to leave everybody with it. You know, I've done this many times. I leave people with such horror stories right before bedtime. And, you know, I'm probably responsible for a lot of bad dreams. So.
Actually, my wife listens to you as she goes to sleep every night.
Oh, my God.
She's doing a podcast, too.
Oh, my God.
And you are her bedtime lullaby. She literally goes to sleep listening to you many nights.
Ah! Okay.
You would give me bad dreams.
Yeah, really. Be careful. She might turn on you some night and just, you know, all of a sudden you feel her fingers around your throat.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I'm calling is to give you my advice on how I deal with people who are spouting religious stuff. I just mentally imagine them talking about Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny whenever they bring up the topic of God. And that way I can smile at them.
Yeah.
Because it makes the same kind of logical sense. It's just as foolish.
You know, if it were just that innocent, which I think is the way Jesus presented himself. He used parables. He seems to have favored children. I don't know. Maybe he hated children. But the historical record, such as it is, indicates that he was a very peaceful, gentle soul. Probably had a lot of Buddhist influence. That part of the Middle East was not necessarily a terminus of the Silk Road, but there were an awful lot of people coming from the East. Who probably influenced the young Jesus from the time he was 14 until his ministry year when he was 33. Probably an awful lot of Buddhism, chanting, meditation that he adopted. And, excuse me, Jesus, I lost my train of thought.
People back then were well-read. He was a scholar, the historical figure known as Jesus. So it's not unlikely that he was exposed to lots of different ideas.
Right. And to presume that the only influence he had was that of the rabbis of his time or this bloody book that constitutes the Christian's Old Testament is ridiculous. That was a time when there was an awful lot of exchange of ideas. It was starting to happen. And so I like to imagine that if there was a human named Jesus, he was deeply influenced by meditation and the empty mind and conscious awareness and so on and so forth.
Hey, one last thing, Mike. Are you going to come out here for a radio talkers thing like you have the last 2 years? I'll drive down across the border to see you.
No, I'm going to pass this year. I talked to the people at the Seattle station and just decided this year I'm not going to make that trip. The turnaround is too fast, and it's Molly's birthday that day, I think they're doing it on the 22nd of July, and that happens to be Molly's 8th birthday. So,
well, we'll keep it lit for you out here anyway.
Thank you, Bucko. All right, man, take it easy. Appreciate your call. I just started tripping out there, completely lost my train of thought. All of a sudden I'm picturing, you know, this rabbinical person, this Jesus, if he really existed, historical Jesus, let's say that he did, and I'm picturing, you know, merchants coming from India or Persia or Afghanistan or whatever the countries were called then, and, you know, sitting around chanting, you know, and, you know, Nam Myoho Renge, or whatever, you know, just chanting maybe Hindu influences, Buddhist and Hindu influences, right? No? Yes? Whatever. I don't know why I get, you know, why I get so hung up on it is because I know what Bucko was talking about is what led me into that was the terrible violence that is religion. If there was an historical Jesus and if he his message was what you can find in that texts, those texts, then it was very peaceful, very laid back. You can imagine sitting around with Jesus back then and smoking a joint or doing mushrooms or something and just contemplating, I don't know, existence or whatever. But it sure got changed. And that's one of the reasons that I despise religion with every fiber in my being, because every single religion is vicious, hateful, mean, and denies a person's humanity unless the person accepts that particular religious point of view. Now, I'm obviously not, I don't want to make that an all-inclusive statement because it's not totally true. Wicca doesn't do that. Certain subsets of Buddhism don't do that. I don't know about Shintoism. I don't know about even about Confucianism. I'm just not aware. But it's been my experience that most religions are just filled with contempt for the other, filled with contempt to the point where when the rules were made, the rule said, you know, not no man passeth unto the Father but by me, in the words of Jesus, but no man passeth unto the Father, but by my religion. And that sucks. And anyone who promotes that is ultimately promoting hatred. I mean, there's no way around this, pal. Anyone who says my way or the highway, and this involves your soul, this involves your essence. This involves anything about you that may or may not be immortal. And you will believe this or you will be condemned to darkness or worse. You know, the Christians come up with fire and poison and hatred and pain and suffering. Oh, man. What's your point? You know what I'm saying?
And if his eyes were pretty glazed, if he looks spaced out, would you buy his story? Would you believe he had an eye infection? And yeah, God looks faked. Yeah, God smells good.
Before the hour, my faith is gone. This hour has been sponsored. All right, cut the music. Thank you. This hour has been sponsored by Gerard Brown for President campaign. He is claiming to have more experience than any other candidate, having lived 83 plus years. He has been a journalist, a tax collector, legislative and press aide to U.S. Congressman Johnny Walker of New Mexico, Director of Information for the Disabled American Veterans, and Director of Information for Pinellas County, Florida, which is St. Pete. Served in the Army, was an ex-POW, and would like to run for president. Gerard Brown for president. Check him out. Jack is in Lehigh Acres, Florida. Hello, Jack.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I hear you were talking about, I heard you there. You were talking about the highest level of carbon dioxide.
Right.
Yes. And I was thinking about an orbital sunshade. It's been discussed a couple times.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Mm-hmm.
And it could buy us some time to get our act together, so it wouldn't change the ocean acidification. And I want to know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I don't know that much about it. It sounds a little dodgy to me. I don't know how such a thing could be done. I'm sure it probably could be, but I do not understand the science of it. In order to put something like that in orbit would require an admission on the part of the people who control all of our destinies that a problem exists. And I don't think that's going to happen. I have heard of this. I've heard of a couple of ideas that sound on the surface as if they're, you know, sci-fi or something that Robert Heinlein might have come up with. But when you look at it, you know, it probably is feasible. And in a weird kind of way, it probably makes some sense. But a shield, such as what you're talking about, would be the type of scientific undertaking that would have to involve just about every functioning society on Earth to get something like that to happen. And, you know, we can't even get people here on Earth to stop murdering children in Syria or in your local, raping children in the local Catholic Church. So I don't think the human race is ready for that. We probably need another great extinction. The experiment with humans having failed miserably.
I hear that.
So if you find a website with some info on that and you feel like it, send it to me. I'll take a look at it this time, okay?
Will do, Mike.
All right, thanks, Jack. Appreciate it. Yeah, I've heard about that, but it, you know, like I said, it would be a massive engineering undertaking, wouldn't it? Undertaking, wouldn't it? Undertaker? One of them there words! Give me that goddamn snake! And I think the human species has proved itself incapable of anything other than some of the basis forms of emotions. You know, greed, the seven deadly sins. You know, they're called deadly for a reason. But I think we're way past. I hate to say this, and unless there is some transcendent event that occurs. I'm not talking about a comet heading this way or, you know, some horrific tectonic plate shift or, you know, just some sort of a transformative event that strikes everybody at the same time or close to the same time in what most people would call their soul center. We're doomed. We are. I mean, come on. We are heading in one direction. We have become like time. We only are flowing in one direction. And that direction is annihilation. I mean, we know this. We all know this. I think a lot of people say, well, not in my lifetime and not my kids. Okay. But, you know, it's still going that way. And we need some sort of transcendent moment. Something unlike anything that has ever occurred that will focus people or this particular species is doomed. There's no doubt with this, folks. I mean, there isn't. There's no point sitting around and talking about it because we're way past the point where talk means anything. I don't know if what this sort of fantasy transcendent event would be. I have no idea. I don't know. I don't have a clue. I'm just saying it would take something on that magnitude. Negotiations, working deals, using the free market. Jesus Christ, that sounds so ridiculous. You know, to solve problems, government intervention, peace in our time, blah, 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 blah. No. So somebody come up with an idea. What do you think the transcendent moment has to be? You know, these crazed religious freaks will tell you, well, it's God coming down on the white horse. Oh, bite me, for God's sake, get away. But something that reaches over, around, or through all the crazy philosophies we have on this planet, whether they're socioeconomic or political or religious or blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? I hope we find out what it is. Maybe Bob Alexander knows. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. If your sword